You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.
Show brought to you by Last Word on Sports. I'm Molly Smith, and joining me as always is Rob Mitchell. How are you doing, Rob?
Oh, good, Molly. How are you?
Yeah, very well, thank you. We're going to start with the weekend roundup as usual, and of course, it was the big one, the World Cup final on Saturday. New Zealand versus Australia ended a 34-17 victory for the All Blacks. I know we were both there, Rob. Can you just explain, first of all, the atmosphere in the stadium and then the game itself?
Very good atmosphere in the stadium, obviously very tense, so neither team really wanted to lose this. The All Blacks came out quite blocks quickly, were far more clinical early on. They were well disciplined in their own half. I thought they only gave Bernard Foley the one shot in the first half at goal. But it was the second half it changed when Smith got himself put in the bin. I think that was the turning point. I don't think Australia were really looking like Martin had come back until that point, but they made good use of the extra man and brought themselves right back into it before, once back up to their full complement, the New Zealand reasserted their dominance.
Yeah, I think it was a couple of minutes into that sin bin period and David Pocock went over for his try. Mm. I mean, you were sat next to me, Rob, and you said, you know, in this 10 minutes, if Australia can get a 7-point try, then they can really, you know, get back in the game. And yeah, they certainly did. They took it up to 21-10, and then more tries and more conversions came along. And then obviously Smith came back on field and it sort of turned back in more of the favour of the All Blacks. They just seemed to have the dominance throughout that whole match, didn't they?
Yeah, they got it back to 21-17, I think, by the time Smith re-entered the fray. And it was one of those things where if they could have got the next score, be it even a penalty at that point, and made it just a 2-point game, it really would have put the pressure on the All Blacks. But Dan Carter settled the nerves, put that, I think the drop goal was the next points.
Yeah.
And just gave them that sort of calming influence that then allowed them to go on and win.
Yeah, that drop goal took them for a 7-point advantage, and then obviously Beauden Barrett with that fantastic try that just sealed the deal for them. And you know, Twickenham was just crazy. It was the best atmosphere I've ever known at rugby match, and you know, rightly so. It's the biggest occasion in the sport, but it was just the whole atmosphere must have just lifted the players to an unbelievable level. And obviously, Australia, you know, they definitely try to bring their A game, but it just seemed like the All Blacks were just that world-class side that everybody knows and loves, and obviously made history by being the first team to defend their title.
Yeah, it's almost happened a couple of times. Obviously, Australia got back to the final in 2003 after winning 99, and then England in 2007 after winning 2003, although I think it would be very easy to make the argument that England side was not a worthy World Cup winner had we nicked that one off the Springboks. It's going to happen eventually. I mean, we've still only 24 years since the first World Cup, so it's one of those things that was going to happen as you got down the line further. But yeah, it's happened now, and I think New Zealand will be looking to make it 3 in a row in 4 years' time.
Definitely. Obviously, Michael Cheeker after the match said that, you know, they were... I don't think he said that they were the better side, but he said they were deserved winners. And I think that's, you know, resounded across the sport. you don't get sides like New Zealand who have got the amount of high quality players that they've got, and then you know that you expect to see them in the final, don't you? Whoever they're up against, you always expect to see a side like New Zealand in that final. And yeah, it was great, and you know, credit to Australia and their guys, because they really, they, like you say, in that 10-minute period where Ben Smith was off in the bin, they really utilised that one man advantage and got the bit between their teeth and were desperate for more points. And I think especially when that extended lead for New Zealand came about, they didn't put their heads down, and they just carried on, continued to fight back and try and put the defences up. And unfortunately, Beauden Barrett managed to squeeze through and obviously seal the deal for New Zealand. But yeah, great credit to Australia as well. Brilliant opponents. And it was great to see Steve Hansen in the post-match interview saying and paying huge respect to that Australian side. It was nice to see that they had so much respect and honour for their opponents, which is nice to see, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
I got a few words with Ma Nonu after the game in the post-match interviews. He explained why this World Cup has meant just so much to him.
I think that motivation was always secondary, really. We didn't really want to talk about who was leaving, whose last game was this week. We just wanted to focus on what we needed to do this week.
He also paid compliments to the careers of his teammates Richie McCaw and Dan Carter.
They've been massive players the last decade. I think Richie McCaw is the greatest player I've ever played with. He's an ultimate leader and one that I've always looked up to in terms of him leading us out, and I reckon he's done a great job. DC's just kicked into another level the last 3 weeks, so really happy for him to have the best World Cup he's had.
And of course, that second half try of his, Rob, obviously you saw it as well, but it looked like Sonny Bill Williams basically gave him the ball for that try. It was a brilliant moment, wasn't it? Mm. And you know, there's for a career like Nonu's that's spanned so long, and he's had so many great moments. The question was that try the most special?
Yeah. At this moment, it's just a lucky try.
So, yeah. So I think he was he alongside most of the All Blacks were very happy with what they'd done. They'd got there, they'd done the job, but of course they are going to be looking to head home in the next few days, get back to their families, and we'll have to see what happens to this All Black side. Like Nonu said just there, you won't see this All Black side again. Rob, what do you think that they can take from this World Cup going into their sort of their regrowth in the next few years? A lot of big names are going out of this side in the next few years. We won't see them in the 2019 World Cup, that's for sure. Obviously, you've got great guys through, Milner Scudder, he had an amazing game on Saturday. You've got young guys like him who are coming through the ranks. Do you think they're going to be the ones leading from the front in 4 years' time?
Well, they'll have to be. So it's a long way away, 4 years, so you don't know who's going to come up and through the and establish themselves. But there are positions now available in the All Black side that have not been available for a long time. The number 7 shirt in particular has been well held down, shall we say, by Richie McCaw. So there's going to be some change, and it's how they deal with that. It's also how they deal with the leadership change, because obviously all those players that you've talked about are all leaders on the field for New Zealand.
Yeah.
It's not just Richie McCaw as the captain. Obviously, he's a big part of that, but Dan Carter leads the backs. You've got Nonu leads by example. All these players, they are all leaders in their own right. And you can when you're in New Zealand, you've got all this talent around. It's not... Okay, we're talking about some exceptional players here, so it's going to be harder than normal to replace a retiring player, but you're going to be replacing with someone that's a lot younger, a lot less experienced, and although they may have comparable talent, that remains to be proven, obviously, but do they have that same leadership quality? It's something Ireland is starting to have they're going to have to deal with as well, having lost Brian O'Driscoll last year and now Paul O'Connell. You look at how, in terms of Ireland, how they replaced Gordon Darcy and Brian O'Driscoll both with Robbie Henshaw and Jarrod Payne. They have, in terms of skill, sort of kept Ireland moving forward, but have they quite replaced the leadership that those players brought? Not 100% sure at this point.
No, and it's that leadership that makes a team, isn't it? You know, you can have all the talent you want, but to bring them together as a team and unite them on the field to play great rugby, that's the real key aspect of captaincy and leadership in general. We're going to move on now to Friday night. It was the bronze match at the Olympic Park Stadium in London. South Africa beat Argentina 24-13. A lot of people are questioning what the point of this game is. It must be very difficult for a player, knowing that you didn't make the final, you crashed out in the semi-finals, especially for South Africa, who came up against New Zealand, and it was a very physical match there. It must be very, very difficult for them to wake up on that Friday morning, knowing they've got to play another 80 minutes, put their bodies completely on the line, and not really get anything for it at the end.
Yeah, it's a very strange one, and I think the last time it was actually relevant to anything was 95, when, in terms of, aside from obviously getting the bronze medal, when only the top three teams in the World Cup qualified automatically. So England played France and France won, and England had to qualify for the next World Cup. But since then, it's been quarterfinals, and now even the third place teams in the pool get through. So yeah, it doesn't have much bearing on it. I think I may compare it to kissing his sister, which is obviously an interesting metaphor. But I'm going to say one thing here. I was at the game on Friday night, and I'd been to the Olympic Stadium twice previously for rugby, for the Samoa Barbarians game and for the Ireland Italy game, and the atmosphere in both those games was quite dead, and for most of this game it was. But in the second half, the Argentinian fans, who were also excellent against Australia the week earlier, came alive, and they had the place rocking. And when Ireland can't do that, it takes something special. I mean, Molly, you were at Ireland, Romania in the tournament. You can attest to how well the Irish fans can create an atmosphere.
Yeah, it's you know, and you have certain teams and their fans and their followers who do, like we've said it before, the Argentinian fans. It's
fans of the tournament for me.
Yeah, definitely, and they create this this occasion. And it's almost like a party for them. It's not just an 80 minutes match of rugby. Mm. It's a whole day out. And, you know, yes, the Irish and the Irish are very passionate, and you can definitely hear them. And, you know, they're, you know, each side, each fans get behind their sides. But the Ireland have always had this ethos of doing it that one better and that one bigger. Mm. And Argentina, you know, you say, just blew Ireland out of the water. And yeah, fans of the tournament for me as well, because you know, wherever they went, they put their mark on it, and you couldn't help but want to join along with them, because they were just, you know, such in good spirits, and you know, it must have really had a great influence on their side.
Yeah,
we're going to move on now. We're going to leave that there, and you know, well done to South Africa. It's kind of weird to have all Southern Hemisphere sides in the semi-finals and the finals, but there you go, that's how it's worked out. And I do believe that's the World Cup action over, unless I've missed something.
No.
We'll talk about the World Rugby Awards a little bit later on in the show, in the news section, but for now we're going to move on to the weekend's reviews of the domestic matches. So moving on to the Aviva Premiership, Saracens beat London Irish 24-14. Bath lost at home to Harlequins 28-38 to the Quins there. Gloucester got a narrow victory over Worcester Warriors 24-22. Newcastle went down 3 points to 41 against Exeter Chiefs. Sale Sharks beat Northampton Saints 30-13 and Leicester beat Wasps at Welford Road 24-16. Rob, any matches that really stood out for you there?
Most of them, actually. There's so much to talk about. The top one that you spoke about is actually one of the few that didn't. Saracens beating Irish, I think it was fairly expected, fairly routine. But Quinn's going away to Bath, continues their good start to the season. I mean, putting 38 points on at the Rec is good working by any away team, so fair play to them. Worcester, again, showing how competitive they are, especially compared to last year's promoted side, London Welsh. Getting a losing bonus point and only just missing out on getting the win at Gloucester, which is, again, not an easy place to go. Newcastle, Exeter, I would expect Exeter to win, possibly not by that margin. Northampton struggling, losing to Sale after losing to Worcester in their first game.
Yeah,
we're only three games in, so it's hard. You can't be writing them off just yet, but maybe sort of cause for concern that these are games that Northampton would be expecting to win if they want that crack at the playoffs. There are harder games to come than Sale and Worcester, no disrespect to those sides, but having to go away to Welford Road and to the Allianz Stadium, there are some tough trips ahead for Northampton, and they're already on the back foot. And Leicester Wasps, Leicester continue their good start to the season in the fairly new East versus West Midlands match. So, yeah, I think Wasps would have liked that to have been a closer game by the time we got to the final score. But again, Leicester carry on in reasonably impressive form. They have, okay, they've got away with a couple of results, but it's not how you win, it's if you win.
Yeah, and obviously for Leicester, like you said, you mentioned there, it's a relatively new East versus West Midlands derby. I think as Richard Cockrell put it earlier, because I spoke to him today at the team press day, and he said he liked the fact that they went back down the M69 with nothing. Mm. So he was quite happy that obviously that they'd got a win. The big one that stood out for me, and we did mention it at the Tigers, Northampton Saints, like you said, they've only got one win from three. And when you compare it to last season, it seems like, you know, the tables have turned on them a little bit. They got off to a cracking start last season, and it was Leicester who were dragging behind at the start of the 2014-15 season. So what do you think Northampton can do to redeem themselves? Because, you know, you said very rightly, Rob, Sale and Worcester, you know, without disrespect to them, aren't the big guys in this Premiership. When you come up against Bath and Exeter and Saracens and Leicester, you need to bring your A game. And, you know, for a top side like Saints, who, you know, won this thing 2 years ago and came close last year, they need to really look at what they're doing wrong, because they're going away and they're not getting the win. And actually, against Newcastle Falcons, yes, they got the win, but it wasn't, you know, particularly convincing.
When Northampton got the fixtures out and they saw Worcester, Newcastle, Sale, they'd have been targeting three wins from three, much like, and they'd have been hoping they'd have been keeping pace with Leicester and Saracens, who have obviously done that so far. And we looked at the table last year, and you had, It was 7 if you want to include Sale, 8 in Harlequins last year. Going into 4 doesn't fit, so every point is going to count. You're going to have Leicester, Saracens, Exeter, Wasps, Harlequins, as Northampton, Bath, all targeting the playoffs this year, and there are going to be some disappointed teams. So Northampton, I think they can integrate their World Cup players back in, and they just got to. I mean, they've got quality players there.
Yeah,
it's just getting that balance back right, and and doing it soon, because the further they fall behind, the harder it's going to be to catch up. Quinns proved that last year. They had obviously didn't have a great season. They fell well behind, and they're now playing the consequences, not even playing in the Champions Cup. They're playing in the Challenge Cup this year. So they won the Premiership a couple of years before that. So it can turn around quickly in the Premiership. So Northampton, I'd say it's not a crisis yet, because we're only three games into the season.
It's not the start that they were looking for.
No, it's not the start they were looking for, and it's something that they don't want to keep dragging. They don't want to go into this week's game against Saracens. I mean, they're playing Saracens this weekend. They've been hoping that they'd have been on a par with them. It's going to start to look worse if they lose that game as well.
Definitely, you want when you go into the big games, and especially with the European games coming up in a couple of weeks as well, you want that confidence of getting off to a great start, and not being comfortable and complacent, but being happy where you are. You know, this season it's just back-to-back fixtures; they've not got a weekend off, so they need to really, you know, be hitting the ground running. Whether that is for the Premiership or the European games. So I think for them, for Saints, they really, I think that there's a lot of stuff that needs readdressing. But on the other hand, not letting these first few games and these first few losses, you know, they can't let it get under their feet, and they've got to just progress forward, haven't they?
Yeah, they've got to turn it around quickly. They can't sort of wallow in self-pity sort of thing, go, oh, we're not getting the results we wanted, and then let it drag and get a couple of more points slip here and there. They just got to get on with it, be professional, and turn it around.
Brilliant. We are going to move on now to the Pro 12 fixtures from the weekend. Scarlets won at home to Newport Gwent Dragons 25-15. Munster got a slim victory over Ulster 32-28. Zebra won at home 26-15 to Cardiff Blues. Connacht beat Edinburgh 14-9. Glasgow got a resounding victory over Ospreys 31-19. And Benetton Treviso lost 3 points to 27 against Leinster. Rob, I think that was a pretty convincing win for Zebra there. Especially against a big side like Cardiff Blues.
Yeah, and already having beaten Edinburgh this year, it's just showing that there is a bit more competitiveness about the Italian sides this year. Obviously, Bertrand Treviso didn't have the best weekends, but they've been closer than they were last year. Zebra have really stepped it up, and it's good to see. I think it's good for the league that these teams aren't just sat there at the bottom getting thumped by all the other teams. So I don't think any of the other teams will be taking Zebra lightly now. They proved that win against Edinburgh was no fluke, and it's going to make it an exciting league.
Yeah, on to bigger and better things for that team, definitely. Munster seemed to have a bit of a drag against Ulster. They only just got away with a 32-28 victory over their rivals there. They were at home, and Ulster obviously have a great side and have a lot of big names in there. Do you think the influence of the guys coming back from international duty is really levelling sides out now?
It's going to start to. I think it will still be the next couple of weeks over as they integrate more, as players start to start more. Obviously, we've seen different attitudes. Some teams are bringing team players back via the bench rather than throwing them straight in. So it's going to sort of even that out, and they'll get back to sort of the levels that we expect from these teams. I think Munster, as much as it was tougher than they would have liked, Ulster are a good side. There's no denying that, and they'll be happy to come away with the points.
Definitely. I think we'll leave that there for the minute for the Pro 12, because we'll come on to their preview for this upcoming weekend in a few minutes' time. Now I'm just going to move on to the news. And like I said before, the World Rugby had their annual awards after the end of the World Cup at the weekend. So Sunday in London, they hosted them awards. And I think what we need to say first and foremost is Sonny Bill Williams finally got a medal. And if you haven't heard this story. Obviously, Sonuba Williams got his gold medal at the end of the match on Saturday. Walking around the stadium doing a lap of honour, applauding the crowd. Little boy ran onto the pitch. He took him back to his seat and gave him the medal. And even though the little boy's family had offered to give it back and all this sort of stuff, he said, no, you keep it. He was very, very gracious. And, you know, it was a really nice gesture of him. And World Rugby decided to give him, on the awards evening, give him another gold medal. And I think their phrase was, one turn of generosity deserves another, which I think is really nice.
Yeah, it's good to see that sort of fair play and generosity, and they say rewarded rather than just sort of, oh, that was nice. So
yeah.
It's good to see it rewarded. But yeah, no, I think it was a great gesture by Sonny Bill Williams, and yeah, good to see World Rugby recognising it.
Definitely. We're going to move on to some of the awards now. And, you know, what happened on the night. The first one that really came out was the Breakthrough Player of the Year. Another All Black here. Nihi Milner-Scudder, his whole campaign this year was great. He was up against one of the Georgian players, and I think it was Mark Bennett from Scotland he was up against for that Breakthrough Player of the Year award. I think it was very well deserved. What about you, Rob?
Yeah, it would be nice to see the Georgian lad get it, just because I think, in fact, I would like to see one of the Japanese lads been nominated as much as they were, because they I thought they were, as a team, Breakthrough Players of the Year. So, but yeah, you can't really argue too much with Milner-Scudder. He's had a great year and he's had a good World Cup.
Yeah, and I think in his this year, he's had his Super Rugby debut, scored twice on his All Blacks debut against Australia, and then crossed the line six times in six games during the World Cup. So, yeah, great achievement, and I think it's very well deserved. We've got, well, I'm trying to think what else we've got. Women's Sevens Player of the Year, Portia Woodman from New Zealand, again another All Black. The Black Ferns there are definitely dominating the women's side of rugby union. Another great achievement. 52 tries in this series alone. So and obviously that's the seven series, so a lot more tries, a lot more high impact action. But yeah, congratulations to her there.
Yep.
World Rugby Referee of the Year award went, of course, to Nigel Owens. He is the second Welshman to have taken charge at the Rugby World Cup final.
At least Wales are getting some people to World Cup finals.
Well, yeah, there was that thing that was going around social media. If, apologies to any Welsh people listening.
No, I'm not apologising.
But they did, Rob, they did say, well, you know, what do you call a man in the World Cup final? And the only person it could be is Nigel Owens. So,
We've taken stick off the Welsh for 3 weeks since they beat us at Twickenham.
Yeah.
I'm just getting a bit back.
Of course, that's fine. It's all in jest. We're all good.
Yeah.
He has taken part in 68 test matches, and he is, well, he's just brilliant. We all love Nigel Owens.
He's a very good ref, and it's good to see. But I think after being awarded the World Cup final, I doubt it was much of a surprise to anybody that he was then given the Ref of the Year. So
definitely not. Best match moment went to Japan, of course, against
deservedly
South Africa.
So.
More than 5 million people engaged with this new award. It was a partnership between World Rugby and Facebook. I think they did a poll there, and of course, Japan's shock victory over former champion South Africa came out on top. You know, it was just a magical moment, wasn't it? That opening weekend, it was, you know, just an incredible way to start the tournament, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was something World Rugby sorely needed. Georgia's win over Tonga as well. These new sides coming up and actually getting wins, not just making these performances, but turning it into points, I think was very important for this World Cup. And it's, as much as we can wax about Australia and New Zealand and Argentina and how well they've played, this World Cup is the best World Cup because of the Tier 2 nations and
yeah.
how they've performed and how it is competitive. we saw very few hammerings. England against Uruguay was one. Ireland against Canada, things like that. They were few and far between at this World Cup. Whereas when the Tier 1 had played the Tier 2 at previous World Cups, they've been far more commonplace. So competitive games and shock wins is what's made this World Cup a success. Sorry to the All Blacks, not you. You're sort of just the icing on the cake. The reason this has been the best World Cup is it's been the most competitive World Cup.
Yeah, and it's been brilliant. And I think they say it's been the biggest and the best World Cup. And, you know, of course it has been. It was hosted in England. The try of the year went to Julian Surveyor. In case you didn't see it, it was in the quarterfinal against France. He basically did a Jonah Lomu, bounced off three French defenders, touched down in the left corner, and honestly, it was just incredible. When you saw it, it was just crazy. Other guys up for that award, Fete Benikolu for Tonga, he had a great try. Vincent Dabati for France, Justin Tipperick for Wales, and then Julian Surveyor. Yeah, it was just brilliant. Some of those tries. And, you know, you can just type it into any search engine, best tries of the 2015 World Cup, and you'll have a whole load there to feast upon. There's just been some brilliant moments, hasn't there?
Yeah.
Other mentions, World Rugby Team of the Year, of course, New Zealand. Coach of the Year went to Michael Chika for Australia. He's really worked some wonders there. And yes, they did win, but it was great for him to get that recognition.
I'm going to call foul on this one. I don't agree with this one. I know a lot of the All Blacks are going, oh, he's going to say Steve Hansen. No, I'm not. I think Eddie Jones deserves this by a country mile. Winning three pool games with Japan. I mean, he said he was targeting the quarterfinal before the tournament, and everybody laughed.
Yes.
No one's laughing anymore.
No, definitely not. He really has turned that Japan side around. I think the only reason Michael Chika got it is because, you know, Australia, you know, we all said that Group A was the group of death. They didn't lose a match. You know, but obviously both New Zealand and Australia hadn't lost a game until they got to that final, and obviously Australia went down. But Michael Chika just seems to have this thing about him that he is so gracious in defeat. Yes, they're very few and far between, but the way he speaks about his side, the way he entrusts his players and his captain in Stephen Moore, he just has this aura about him that, you know, yes, there's lots of other coaches that were very deserving of the try as well, but I'm very glad Michael Chika got it.
Yeah, my question would be, if Michael Chika had been in charge of Japan, would they have beaten South Africa? Would they have beaten Samoa? Yeah, they'd probably still have beaten the USA. I think they were one of my disappointments of the tournament. I thought they would do better. I think Eddie Jones actually really deserved this one, just because, I mean, bar a quick turnaround against Scotland, he'd have had Japan in the quarterfinals. I really believe that.
Yeah. And, of course, Player of the Year, there were so many people up for this. I think Greg Laidlaw was one. Stuart Hooper was another. Of course, in the end, it went to man of the moment, Dan Carter. He finishes his...
You mean Billy Twelve Trees has been overlooked again?
Yes, he has. I know. It's crazy, isn't it? Absolutely crazy. He finishes off his sterling All Black career. I think this is the third time he's got this award.
I'm sure
it's something like that. But, you know... And he was reminiscing, especially post-match, reminiscing with that drop goal as well. And you know what? The ice on the cake for him, if you go back and watch that match, that final kick after Beauden Barrett's try, that final kick, he kicked it with his right foot. And everyone knows that Dan Carter's a left-footed kicker. Mm. And apparently post-match, he just said, you know what? I've wondered for years and years and years, would I be able to make it with my right foot? And he's done it in training, but he was thinking, like, in the environment with that pressure, would he be able to kick it with his right foot? And he did, and he landed it. And I think that for him is such an achievement to you know, there's nothing else for him to prove now, is there?
No, but I'm not sure when time's expired and you're 19 points up in the World Cup final, if that really counts as pressure.
No, but I mean, because obviously he will have...
Yeah, I know it's different.
He's kicked before with his right foot, obviously. It's not going to be the first time ever he's kicked with his right foot. He'll have done it in training tons of times, but I mean...
I don't think you're quite replicating sort of crunch time conditions
there. No, of course not. No, but, you know, it's still the Rugby World Cup final, and how would it have been if he'd have gone out of the World Cup, his last play, he missed it? How, you know, it wouldn't have been...
I don't think he'd have cared at that point, having won the World Cup.
I think looking back on it, he would have gone, actually, if I'd have just done it with my left foot and, you know, done it as I usually do it, I wouldn't be sitting here going, I could have rounded off my whole international career perfectly if I'd have just got that final kick. Yeah. I think for a guy like Dan Carter, who obviously takes pride in everything he does, and he is a perfectionist, you know, you've seen it throughout his career, as a lot of number 10s are, and again a lot of the All Blacks are, because, you know, that precision and perfection is what gets them into a team, you know, the striving to always do better. I think for him it's going to be, you know, a real achievement. Actually, he's going to probably give himself a pat on the back and say, yes, I've won Player of the Year, yes, I won as a team, we won the World Cup again. But, you know, that attention to detail, I got that kick with my right foot, I think that's going to be something that he's going to look back on and go, you know what, I kind of did it. I didn't have to do it, but I took the risk and I did it. So for him, I think it's it's something that he can look back on and be pretty proud of. So yeah, so that is it for the rugby awards. We're going to move on now to a bit of domestic news. Lewis Peacamole has signed a 3-year deal with Saints Premiership. Now, this didn't really come out as a big story for me. I'm not sure whether it's because I already knew about it, but there's been rumours flying around for ages.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things that was fairly common knowledge, but obviously they're waiting till after the World Cup was over to officially announce it. I think it's a good signing for Saints. He's obviously a very good player. I think they might be thinking, how can we get him earlier? Because he's not coming till next year, if I'm correct.
I think there's a bit of a time. He's got to finish off his time in the top 14, and then he's heading over to the Aviva Premiership.
So he'll be there next year. So yeah, it's a good signing. He's obviously quality number 8 playing for the French team. So it'll be interesting to see his impact on the Premiership. And I think, yeah, as I said, it's a good capture for Saints.
Definitely, and you know, these marquee signings, it's nice to have the guys coming through the academies and all this sort of stuff. But to have that pot of money to get the marquee signings, they're the, you know, the Lewis Peacamoles and the John de Villiers and guys like this who come, and the Brad Thorns who come into the Premiership. Yes, some people say we should be focusing more on the academy players, but these are the guys, these are the big names that show the path to the top of the guys coming through the academies, and they go, actually, you know what, having that experience and that guidance and that mentorship playing alongside us in the same squad, it just must be brilliant for the younger
lads. Yeah, this is what that sort of thing is for, those marquee players. You want the top, the very top players coming in and working with the young guys. What we don't want to see is an influx of players sort of just basic Premiership player coming over from France just because it's a bit cheaper or something, rather than playing an academy guy. There's that balance. At the moment, the Premiership is just about getting it right. I think you look over at France and they've gone a bit too far with it, and that is starting to show in their national team.
Yeah, you've got to have the correct balance, haven't you? And I think we are so aware of what's happening in the top 14 that I'm sure a lot of people in the Premiership would say, actually, we've got to be very, very careful with how we handle this. Yes,
well, great. I think this is also a sign of that. You look at, obviously, Lewis Peacamole is coming to play in England now. So you might start to, that might be a knock-on effect as well, of all these big foreign stars playing in France. Do you see some of the top French players going playing the Aviva Premiership or the Pro 12?
Yeah, definitely. So that'll be that for the news this week. We're going to preview the weekend's action now. We're going to start with the Premiership. Harlequins will host Sale. Worcester face Newcastle Falcons. London Irish will host Bath. Northampton Saints host Saracens at Franklin's Gardens. Exeter Chiefs will host Leicester Tigers. And Wasps will face Gloucester. Which match? Just pick one, Rob. Because I want to put you on the spot. Just pick one. What are you expecting from that game?
Well, as I've already spoken about Northampton Saracens, I'll go with a different one. Worcester Newcastle. Obviously, Newcastle haven't had the best start. Worcester, they've had a better start than possibly people thought. They'll be seeing this as a very winnable game at six ways, so they'll be targeting point 4 point, maybe even five, depending on if they can get a bonus point. So yeah, I think that could be one to watch. I think it'd be a tight game, but I think Worcester could come out on top there.
Okay, I'm not going to go with Exeter Tigers because we've heard a lot and we've previewed a lot about that. Just a quick injury update for anyone who doesn't know. It's not completely come out of the news yet, but Apeti Fanoa is out for 6 to 8 weeks, according to Richard Cockerill, with a broken arm that he sustained in last week's match against Wasps. He said it's not like he's completely snapped his arm. It's just a little hairline fracture in his forearm, but it will mean he's out for about 6 to 8 weeks. But you've got the likes of Jordan Crane coming back from injury. He said he's happy to be back in the Tiger shirt and not in a suit doing corporate, which, you know, that's nice to know. So that's just a little heads up for Tigers fans there. I'm going to pick up London Irish Bath, because London Irish at home, and I've said it for a couple of seasons, they are a very formidable side at home. And Bath, obviously, they're coming off the back of that loss to Harlequins. They're going to be seeking redemption. I'm not sure they're going to find it at the Majestic Stadium, though. I think it will be a lot closer than people think. And I'm sure if Bath do win it, it won't be by many points, because yes, they're coming off the back of a loss, and you know they'll be looking for that win. But a week ahead of European games, I think they're not gonna be looking at this game as you go against a side like Saracens or a side like Northampton Saints, and it is like a cup final match. I think Bath will be focusing more on how they play rather than getting the win from London Irish, because their form, like that, their how they played against Harlequins wasn't very convincing, was it?
No, with London Welsh gone and Worcester showing how competitive they can be, there are now no gimmies in this league. You're going to have to play at a high level every week, and as we said, with no breaks, this is going to be a tough year to do that. So yeah, Bath haven't got time to sort of lick their wounds from last week and sort of go, okay, it's only London Irish. Yes, they haven't won any games yet, but they were very competitive with Tigers. That there is talent in that side, and if Bath underestimate them, they will get punished.
Of course, and I think for a side like Irish, they look to these big matches against the big boys to field their strongest players, prepare them in the best way possible, like they would any other match. But I'm just saying, the emphasis is so much more against the big sides like Bath, and the fact that they're coming in off the back of a loss to a side like Harlequins. I think they are, yeah, like you said, I think if they underestimate London Irish and focus more on just getting points and racking up the points on the board, London Irish could run rings around them. I think it's going to be a lot closer than people think, but you know, we'll see after this weekend. Moving on to Pro 12 now, Connacht will host Benetton Treviso. Leinster Rugby host Scarlets. Ospreys will face Zebra. Cardiff, they will face Glasgow Warriors. Munster travel away to Edinburgh for their weekend's match. And Newport Gwent Dragons will host Ulster. What do you reckon to those fixtures, Rob?
Some interesting ones. I think Edinburgh Munster will be a tight game. The big one, though, for me is Leinster Scarlets first versus fourth. Obviously, we're still only in the early stages, so this is a good one to watch, and obviously Scarlets going to Leinster could make this an interesting fixture.
Definitely, I think that's the one that I'd pick out as well, purely because it is just going to be so tight at the top there in the Pro 12 this year. Like we say, a lot of guys are coming back from international duty after the World Cup, and it's going to pay dividends to sides that have, you know, especially the Scottish sides, because like we say, Edinburgh, Glasgow, they were really hit hard by lads going out to play for Scotland. So obviously they're slowly being reintroduced. Cardiff Glasgow is going to be a highlight for me as well. See what Cardiff Blues can pull out of the bag after that loss to Zebra last weekend. And that's it for this week, this week's Absolute Flanker. Thank you very much for joining us. Rob, you are on Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
LWS Rob.
And mine is at Molly Ray Maria. You can also follow our rugby page on Twitter at LWS Rugby Union. If you're on Facebook, you can follow us on there, facebook.com/LWS Flanker. And you know, just give us a shout, let us know what you think of the weekend's action. And if you've got any news or rugby stories for us, do let us know. It'd be great to hear from you. Thank you very much, and thank you to you, Rob.
No, thank you, Molly.
And we'll be back next week with the same again. Thank you very much.
You're listening to Last Word Radio, where you get the last word.